If there's anything that we can take away from, at the very least, the last several months, but honestly, I want to say since 2020, is that it is not enough to try to reform or reshape the spaces and the institutions that we have. We have to completely reimagine and rebuild them, because there was an opportunity during the pandemic to really rethink how we work, how we engage with organizations, how we engage with one another, creating a community and culture of care. And instead of this becoming an absolutely beautiful time for reimagining and recreating things that serve all of us, it seemed that, 6 to 8 months in, the work got too hard. And our institutions, as well as a lot of the people around us, frankly, kind of fell into entropy and kind of fell into letting things just kind of go back to the way they were. There is no new normal, because we are dealing with the same normal that we've always had. And the results of that have been very painful for a lot of people. So I think it's time that we think about how to reimagine spaces. You're listening to Feathermane Soul Wisdom, a podcast designed for people looking to live embodied lives and find their authentic selves. This show is hosted by Kit Kailstow, body theologian and spiritual mentor. If you're looking to get in touch with your inner spirit, then this show is for you. Thanks for listening. And now, this week's show. Hi, I'm Kit Kailstow, your host for Feathermane Soul Wisdom, and thank you so much for listening to this week's show. This week, I want to do what probably is going to be the start of a 2 or 3 part series, just kind of looking at the notes I have sketched out, talking about how to reimagine or re-envision some of the spaces and institutions that we have around us to better serve everybody. But I'm also directly speaking to the neurodivergent, chronically ill and disabled, and queer communities. And again, anybody who's in a Venn diagram of any or all of those, let's talk about how to reimagine or re-envision spaces that actually work for us. And as I mentioned in my little teaser intro there, I feel like this is a conversation that people have been trying to have since the pandemic, because for the most part, there was an opportunity right after lockdown hit, March 2020, which sounds like it was ages and ages ago, but really wasn't. There was an opportunity when we were all working from home and we were all kind of isolated and taking care of ourselves and one another and our communities. There was a real thought about how we could get back to a community where we interacted with one another. How could we keep one another safe? How could those who go to a house of worship do so safely? Likewise with school and employment and dealing with our government and civic institutions. And, I don't want to put too fine of a point on it, but that is very hard work. There are structures and things built into our society that have frankly been there for decades, for centuries, since the founding of America, that have not always been welcoming to everybody in a community, that have always excluded one group or another, usually on artificial characteristics, to try to make the society work for some people but not other people. And so we have a chance to reimagine and re-envision it. And I feel like the events, I'm recording this very early February 2025, the events of the last few weeks have really brought that home, that there has been a driving of our community toward elevating certain types of people and not others to the detriment, frankly, of our society or our community. And so, you know, when I've been thinking about this, I'm thinking about this as an individual who lives in marginalized communities, who is also not aware. I'm very aware of my white privilege. I am very aware that I am pretty much, as part of the queer community, I'm pretty much cis passing. Nobody questions it when I talk about my husband. You know, I go to town, I get mammed and missed a lot. And I'm like, whatever, you know, you guys call me what you want to call me. But I'm aware of the privilege that I have. And so my experience in these communities, my experience in my own community, really doesn't match what other people have in their communities. Yes, I'm disabled. It's an invisible disability. So again, I don't get some of the attention, some of the barriers of engaging in public life that other people rightfully so call out and mention. I am neurodivergent, but I am late diagnosed because basically for the most part, I was able to fake my way through neurotypical society until I couldn't, which is the story of us late diagnosed people. So again, as I'm having this conversation, I'm very aware of my own privilege. And I'm also very aware that there are other points of view that I would love to hear from. So this is going to be probably not the last time I'm going to say, but if what I'm talking about, if it resonates with you, if you have additional thoughts, I would love to hear from you. So we have to look at, when we re-envision spaces, what do we mean when we think about spaces? And primarily when I say that, the first thing that comes to my mind is online space. I am thankful to be able to participate in online classes, some of which are asynchronous, meaning I work on them in my own time. I interact with my fellow students through a message board, interact with my professors through email. Works very well. I actually prefer asynchronous classes. However, at the graduate level, most of my classes have been synchronous, which require me to be on Zoom. And while they are accessible in the fact that I don't have to travel 100 miles to campus, I don't have to worry about being in a physical place, because being actually in the classroom with all the other students really messed with my anxiety. I didn't have a diagnosis of social anxiety at that time, but now that I do, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. So being in a Zoom class diminishes that somewhat, but it doesn't eliminate it. And there's a class right now this semester where I'm the only Zoom student. So like my head is like ginormous on this movie screen size surface at the head of the class. And oh boy, that's just not good. So when I'm thinking about re-envisioning spaces, one of the things I'm thinking about is bringing together people who either through distance, through means, through health situations, or through comfort, can't get to a physical space. And so I'm thinking about, you know, how can we do asynchronous work? How can we do synchronous work that doesn't require a camera, for example? How can we do synchronous work that brings together people without making somebody feel like they are singled out and ginormous on a wall? And so that's the first thing. I feel like we need to embrace online activities more. There's this common belief that if I am sitting in my office cabin and engaging with something that is not locally directly in front of me, that somehow I'm not getting as much out of it as the student that's sitting in the classroom. And that's just wrong. In fact, I would argue that I'm getting more out of it because I don't have the additional pressures and stressors of being in the classroom and I'm losing my words here, and I apologize. being stressed out by my anxiety and being stressed out by being around all these students, my ADHD, you know, million thoughts running through my head. I'm going to get more out of your event or out of your class if I'm able to engage from it at my own place where I can control who or what's around me, where I can control even things like, can I hear you? Can I see you? Am I able to take notes without feeling self-conscious? That sort of thing. So I feel like as we're envisioning spaces, step one is to stop thinking of online or virtual spaces as somehow lesser than an in-person space. Along with that, I think we need to think about our language around re-envisioning spaces. Think about who is welcome, who is there, who isn't represented, who might feel uncomfortable if they walk into that space. We need to think about creating more inclusive and welcoming spaces. And yes, this has to do with us, with ethnicity, with race, with class, with, you know, prosperity levels. It has to do with those things, but it, and gender, it also has to do with simple comfort. I'm going to tell this story, and this may not seem related, but when I was marrying my spouse, it was my second marriage. We were both kind of doing it as a formality because we really, we were okay not being married. We had made that commitment and we didn't need the piece of paper, but with changes in health insurance, we did. So I always joke, you know, I married my husband for the insurance. And in doing so, I had done the big wedding. I'd had the white dress and the first time around. And this time, all I wanted was a veil. And so I walked into David's Bridal Store. It's a bridal chain. And I was like, I'm just looking for a veil. And they were like, you know, oh, well, what are you wearing? What do you, you know, what colors do you want? And I was like, I just want the cheapest veil you have. And not only was I not comfortable because I don't feel comfortable in fancy dress, you know, places. I don't dress up fancy. If you knew me, I run around in, you know, my leggings and my oversized t-shirts, and that's how I live because that's how I'm comfortable. You know, fashion has never been my strong suit. Never. But also I could tell I was making them uncomfortable because they were like, what are you going to wear? And I'm like, I don't know, a nice blouse and a pair of jeans. And the look on those consultants' faces, oh my goodness, you would have thought that I was, you know, dancing naked on the tables or something. How scandalous that I would not be going the whole nine yards for this wedding. Well, they went over and they said, well, here we've got, you know, here's what we got. I was like, okay, they didn't have the one I was looking for on the website, which was kind of the problem to begin with. I was like, this is the veil I want. They're like, we don't have that. But you could tell they were trying to upsell me. I finally, you know, got my veil and everything was fine. But it's that sort of, you know, when we talk about including people and making people feel welcome in our spaces. Yes, 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 we need to talk about, you know, race, disability, age, gender, health, class issues. Yes, we need to have those conversations. But I think we also need to have a conversation about who a space is for and what is supposed to happen in that space. In the case of me and the bridal store, that space was for people who were putting a lot more effort into their wedding than I was, and I was clearly not welcome. Yes, they rang up the sale. I'm sure some salesperson got credit for it for their, you know, monthly goals or whatever, but it was clearly not a good fit. And it shouldn't have had to be that problem because people get married in all sorts of different ways and forms and for different reasons. And so it was very clear that they had very specific ideas about what a person, what a bride getting married should look like and do and act like. And obviously that didn't mesh with me because, well, I've never meshed with gender norms. So when we think about our, when we think about our spaces and we think about how welcoming they are and we think about what's going on in those spaces, you know, we need to ask ourselves, do we have very specific ideas about what's going on in those spaces? Do we have very specific ideas about how someone should act in those spaces? And then immediately, if we are in a space and we find ourselves feeling uncomfortable, there's two sides to the uncomfortable coin. And this is totally a part of the conversation about reimagining our spaces. Because the two sides to the uncomfortable coin are either you're uncomfortable with somebody's actions because it's not matching with your norms, with your ideas of what should be happening in this space. The other side of that is you're uncomfortable because you're not matching their ideas of what should be happening in the space. And I'm not talking about like general courtesy. If you're there to hear somebody to talk, you shouldn't be having a conversation about the latest episode of Survivor or whatever you watched in the background, drowning out the person who's talking. It's like you go to a movie, you're not supposed to talk throughout the movie. You're not supposed to, you know, stand up in front of everybody and like do a dance in the front of the movie theater and block people's views of the movie screen. I'm not talking about norms like that. And there are places where that is very welcome as well, too. I'm talking about if you're in a space, and we'll just talk about the grocery store. If you're in a grocery store and you see something going on that kind of makes you uncomfortable. Maybe it is a child misbehaving and throwing a tantrum. Maybe it is one member of a couple not treating the other member of the couple with respect. Maybe it's a rude clerk. We all see things when we're out and about in public that make us uncomfortable from time to time. At that point, we need to ask, you know, who is this affecting? Why are we uncomfortable? And not so much how do we make ourselves comfortable, but is this a me issue or is this an environment issue? So We'll take the common thing, you know, the baby crying on the airplane, the child throwing the fit in the grocery store. Kids are kids. Upsets are going to happen. Upsets are going to happen in ways that they can't articulate their feelings, especially like the baby on the airplane. And as I saw on social media the other day, you know, as somebody says, me too, who doesn't want to cry on an airplane? So then you think about this, okay? Is this an issue with the child? Well, for a lot of us, we would knee jerk and say, well, yeah, you're not supposed to act that way in the grocery store. However, that's not creating an inclusive environment. That's not rethinking our spaces. That's not creating a space where everybody is welcome. What we might want to think about is say, hey, children will be children. Children don't have tools to regulate themselves. Maybe the parents don't have tools to regulate themselves or help teach their children healthy ways to regulate themselves, depending on the age of the child, depending on the parents, that sort of thing. Maybe upsets happen in a public place, and if everybody is doing the best they can. And so we go about shopping. If it's something that, for example, being autistic, loud noises sometimes really overwhelm me, if it's something that is going to affect you or cause you physical concerns or mental concerns, are there ways that you can regulate yourself to make the space more welcoming? And so, like in my case, if you see me out and about shopping, quite often I have headphones on and I'm listening to a podcast. And that's just my way to keep focused, to basically try to shut out noise. And I'm not listening to whatever's blaring over the loudspeakers at Walmart. Again, you know, thinking about inclusive, thinking about rethinking spaces. Does Walmart really need to have, you know, 80s pop music blaring over the speakers while shopping? Well, somebody has done a study that shows that somehow that probably causes somebody to spend more money. And so, you know, Walmart has a reason for that. They don't do that randomly, but they also have, or they used to have, sensory friendly shopping hours. You can put on headphones, you can put in earbuds, you can put in earplugs. There are other ways to mitigate that. And so I think we need to be having these conversations around our spaces. And I know, I can tell, I can feel viscerally that I am only scratching the surface for this. But as we think about my work with authenticity, my work with being embodied, when we think about all of that, a lot of that has to do with the spaces that we move through, in and out of and around on a daily basis, making us not feel comfortable for various reasons. And there are reasons why, for example, a culture that is de-emphasizing work from home is not safe for a great many people. It doesn't, it harms a great many people, including the disability and chronic illness community. And so we could think about it from that level, you know, how do we create a more inclusive environment? Well, if you start thinking about why they're putting people back in the offices, then we have to start thinking about, you know, the real estate sector. We have to start thinking about the punitive culture of work in America, where a lot of bosses are simply there to make sure that you work up to some sort of random arbitrary specification rather than trusting the employees to do the work. And there's some work that needs to be done in an office space. But even there, you know, a good example is, why can't cashiers sit down in America? Well, it has to do with the, you know, certain retail beliefs, certain beliefs about management, certain beliefs that people have about the people who are helping them. There's cultural things to decompress there. And so when we're thinking about rethinking spaces, there's the physical dimension, there's the emotional dimension, there's the dimension of people, you know, your expectations, but there's also cultural things that have been baked in for such a long time that we have to deconstruct all of that. And as we found during the pandemic, that deconstruction can seem very overwhelming, can seem like a lot, because it is a very big project. It's not one for sound bites. It's not one for a 30-second video on Instagram, for example. I mean, I've been talking here for over 20 minutes, and like I said, I completely can feel in my bones that I have not gotten into all of the structures that we would have to rethink and rebuild and redo in order to recreate our spaces. My goal here is to open up the conversation so that way you can start to have the conversation with yourself. Is this space serving me? How can I make this space better for me? How can I make this space a place where I feel comfortable showing up and giving my true self? And so, like I said, I feel like this is going to, you know, start probably a multi-part conversation about that. So I'm going to go ahead and close here. Again, if you have any thoughts about this, if there are things that you would like to share, I would love your comments. Comment on YouTube. Go ahead and subscribe to the Feathermane Soul channel on YouTube. And if you follow me on Instagram, on Facebook, on Blue Sky, on Mastodon. You know, all my handles are on my contact page. You'll also see them in the show notes here. And I look forward to continuing this conversation with you next week. Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kailstow. Learn more about Feather Mane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. Kit's passionate about embodied living and finding authentic joy by connecting with yourself and others. Kit loves working with neurodivergent, chronically ill, or disabled individuals, as well as anyone who wants to reclaim the stories and find new stories for them. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting the podcast website and following the links to Muse Charmer. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow the podcast at your favorite podcast listening or social media site. Thank you.